Blog Talk Radio.
That's right, everybody. You know who it is. Coach Mike Jones on the coach with the most. Coming at you hard from coast to coast. I don't want to boast, but now I got to roast you in my social media posts. You double dose, undiagnosed. You feeling tired, life expired, now you're a ghost. I'll be your host, so won't you raise a toast to the coach with the most, Coach Mike Jones.
Another edition of the Coach Mike Jones Show podcast, episode 83. My goodness, what a beautiful day here in the Northwest. The Mariners got the Red Sox again today. We've split the series so far. Last night we shut them down with George Kirby, 1-0. Today we got Logan Gilbert on the mound. I predict he's going to win 16 games this year. We might even have a 20-game winner this year. But other than that, I got the best co-host in the world. Let me tell you why, because this guy will take you to the sky. He'll make you go sky high. Sign guy, how you doing, brother?
Doing all right today, Coach.
Can you please introduce our guest for us?
Our guest is the AIWF World's Heavyweight Champion, the Golden Boy, Greg Anthony.
Hey, guys.
And how about... Hey, nice to have you, man. Thank you so much. And then, of course, after that, sign guy.
Well, our first-timer questions for the first-time guest of the Coach Mike Jones Show podcast. Golden Boy, how did you get into this crazy business of professional wrestling?
Well, I mean, my family, my grandmother was a huge wrestling fan. So I tell people all the time, my earliest memories of life aren't of, you know, a birthday cake or a new bike or anything of that nature. My first memories of wrestling are sitting on her knee watching professional wrestling. So it was kind of instilled in me from the very beginning. And from there, you know, just when I got in the business, you know, this is, we're talking about late 90s, early 2000s. You know, it was still under that little bit of that, you know, how do you get in? It's almost like a secret society on how to make your way into professional wrestling. Me and some buddies from high school, we were doing the backyard wrestling thing, kind of like the Hardys and a bunch of other people. And my buddy at the time, his dad was a police officer in our hometown, and Memphis Championship Wrestling, which was a developmental territory of the WWF at the time, were coming through our hometown once a month. And this is when they had Daniel Bryan as the American Dragon. They had R-Truth when he was still a Crush. They had William Regal. They had Reckless Youth. They had just this roster of talent was just amazing top to bottom. And my friend's dad went up to the promoter and basically said, hey, listen, my son and his friends are trying to break in professional wrestling. Can you help them? And the promoter, being the genius that he is, he looked at his crowds in this hometown. They were only drawing about 30, 40 people every time they came to our hometown. And he looked at this, and he goes, well, this looks like an opportunity. So he brought us in for, like, a tryout kind of thing where, you know, we kind of showed him what we had, and he said, okay, well, next time we come to town, you guys will have a quote-unquote intermission match. Well, intermission match ended up being semi-main event on that show, and there was 200 people there. Because for the month that he told us we were going to be on the show, that we were going to have this intermission match, we went around for a month in our hometown basically saying, you know, we're professional wrestlers. We're going to get to wrestle, you know. And so we end up packing out the place, and we end up doing that for several months as they came back. But eventually Memphis Championship Wrestling lost this developmental deal. And then when they did that, we caught on with a local promotion here in our hometown or in our home area, and it just, the rest is history from there.
Right on. Man, okay, so my first question is, tell the fans, who are your heroes growing up? And that includes ordinary life, sports, music, and wrestling.
Okay. Wrestling-wise, like, growing up, I was always attracted to the seamless Southern heels. The Flairs, the Arn Andersons, the Tully Blanchards, the Ted DiBiases, the beautiful Bobby Eatons. It wasn't necessarily that I liked heels, because I didn't. It was just I knew anytime those guys were on, it was going to be a good match. And I didn't understand why at the time. But anytime those kind of guys were wrestling, no matter who they were wrestling, whether it was Tom Zink or was it Ricky Morton or whatever the case may be, I was like, okay, this is going to be a good match. I need to watch this. You know what I mean? So even then, I was kind of attracted to that. So some of my earliest wrestling stuff was like, you know, Beautiful Bobby Eaton, because he just – everything Beautiful Bobby Eaton did was better than everyone else. And same thing with, like, Flair and guys like that. And, of course, when you're a kid, you love all the good guys. You hate all the bad guys. So, like, Sting and the Ultimate Warrior, of course, I like anyone with face paint, Road Warriors, that kind of thing. Ricky Steamboat was another guy that I loved. Outside of wrestling, you know, I was a basketball fan. So, you know, the Bulls were my team and still are. So, Jordan, Pippen, you know, Horace Grant, you know, John Paxson, you know, that kind of thing. Football-wise, I was a Niners fan, so it was always, you know, Montana and Jerry Rice. You know, I didn't really get too much into baseball, but, I mean, I was a Cardinal, so Ozzie Smith. Music-wise, man, I was very eclectic, you know, music-wise growing up. I listened to everything from, you know, Meatloaf. My Meatloaf was one of my favorites growing up, and then AC/DC, and then, you know, there was stuff like The Temptations and, you know, R&B and Prince and Michael Jackson and just so on and so forth. So, I mean, I was always very eclectic when it came to a lot of those things.
Awesome. Okay. And did you play sports in high school or growing up?
Basketball. Yeah, I played basketball all through school. I did pretty well, and, you know, they actually asked me to – well, first the TSAA, which is the refs in our state, they tried to recruit me because they saw that I understood the game pretty well, so they tried to recruit me first, and – I got asked to be an assistant coach at several places, but I was so burnt out with basketball by that time, and I was really ready to kind of make the jump to wrestling, you know, so I never did pursue that, but I don't regret that at all. You know, I ended up coaching, you know, my youngest son is a really good high school basketball player. He just finished his freshman high school season, and things are looking up for him, and I got to coach him in youth leagues growing up and things like that, so that was a huge thing for me.
Cool. And then what's your self-defense background?
My self-defense background? Not taking guff off anybody. Is that a self-defense background?
Yeah. Okay.
Pretty much. I mean, exactly. I've always been kind of a laid back guy, but I mean, if you push me to a certain point, you know, it's going to get ugly. I'm not, there was a time in my life when I was afraid of confrontation, but that time is long gone. So I pretty much, you know, we'll have any conversation with anybody about anything. So if you want to have that conversation and it ends up getting too heated for you, we can handle it that way too. So.
Okay, nice. And then in your lifetime, what have been some of the most memorable matches that you've seen? And that includes VHS tape, internet, or live.
And or blame two matches for why I'm a professional wrestler. The first match was Ric Flair and Ricky Steamboat, 2 out of 3 falls. from Louisiana, from New Orleans. I saw that when I think I was seven when that match happened. But that was the first time I remember watching the thing, and I wanted to wrestle when I grew up, but that was the one where I really said, okay, I'm going to be a professional wrestler when I grow up. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that one always holds near and dear to my heart. And the other one is almost the complete opposite of that. But the other one is Mankind and Undertaker Hell in a Cell. And not because,
oh yeah, goodness,
not because I want to get thrown off a 20-foot cell, or I want to take, you know, this ridiculous, you know, slam through the cage to the mat or anything like that, but because I was 16, 17 years old when that match came out, and I looked at that match and I go, you know what? Well, if I'm going to be a professional wrestler, then I have to love it as much as Mick Foley does, because what he did in that match was nothing short of amazing. You know, from anyone that's ever been injured or been in a wrestling ring, you know how hard that must have been. You know what I mean? So to be able to do that for something you love, I knew I couldn't just half-ass it. You know what I mean? I had to love it like he loved it. But,
absolutely.
Besides those two matches, you know, I've always been, you know, Shawn Michaels, I think, is probably one of the greatest in-ring competitors of all time. I don't think I've ever seen a bad Shawn Michaels match. So, like, a lot of Shawn Michaels' WrestleMania matches were just unreal. The one with him and Kurt Angle was one of my favorites, obviously. Him and Undertaker from 25 is amazing. Him and Flair in the, you know, I'm sorry, I love you match, you know. I mean,
yeah,
just one after another. I mean, every match you talk about with him at WrestleMania ends up being this instant classic almost. But I'm also, you know, an old school fan. I love stuff like Dory Funk Jr. There's a match with Dory Funk Jr. and Jack Briscoe from Japan, from All Japan. And it's – if you were going to show somebody – a professional wrestling match and say, this is art. This is as close to Picasso as professional wrestling is going to get. It would be that match.
Very cool. And then of course you're the world champion. I've seen you wrestle live, front and center, ringside. Now we are excited to hear about your most memorable matches you've had.
Man, I've been truly blessed. You know, I mean, I got started very early, you know, 18 years old, and I've had close to 4,000 matches. And, you know, I was always the guy, you know, when the booker or the promoter would go, hey, listen, so-and-so isn't going to be here tonight, blah, blah, who wants to wrestle twice? You know, I was always the guy that raised his hand. You know, so I always prided myself on being a guy that could go out there and work with anybody. So I've had a lot of great matches. I've had there's a guy named Stan Lee from this area who wrestled about 10 years ago, and he was phenomenal. He was our version of Ricky Steamboat. I mean, he was that good. And me and him had some wars. We had, you know, I quit matches. We had hair versus title matches. We just knocked it out of the park every time. Same thing with a guy named Christian Jacobs. We had an empty arena match, like the old Lawler Terry Funk empty arena match. We had one of those, and we had I quit matches, and we had title matches, and you know, some of the stuff, you know, I've got to be in the ring with guys like the New Age Outlaws. You know, I wrestled New Age Outlaws two nights in a row. I wrestled Matt Hardy. I wrestled, you know, Jerry the King Lawler, tagged with him and wrestled with him. You know, so it's just one of those things. Like if you told 10-year-old me, you know, hey, these are the things that you're going to get to do over a wrestling career, you know, I think I would almost burst into flames, you know, if you told 10-year-old me that, because some of the stuff I got to do is so pinch me awesome.
My goodness. Okay, now this next segment is called Favorites. I'm sure Sign Guy and the rest of the fans would like to know what your favorite coffee to drink is, if you drink coffee.
Fun fact about the Golden Boy Greg Anthony, I don't drink anything hot.
Okay.
And I don't even like the taste of coffee, so I won't even drink cold coffee.
Okay, then what's your favorite drinks? Yes, we get that.
I literally drink Diet Mountain Dew and water. That's pretty much my go-tos for everything. And then every once in a while I'll get a wild hair, and I want something with an actual sugar in it, so I may drink like some kind of strawberry, you know, Fanta or something like that.
Right on. Hey, and we're getting close to 50% of the people are saying nowadays they don't drink coffee. I think, I don't know if it's a health thing or what. And then at one point, people used to say coffee was healthy for you.
Yeah, like black coffee, they say, is really healthy for you. I mean, I like the smell of it. You know, I mean, when I smell coffee,
okay,
I'm like, oh,
yeah,
that smells pretty good. But the minute I try to drink it, I try about every couple of years just to see if my taste buds have changed at all, and it just doesn't happen. So.
Okay. And then what about your favorite concerts you've been to?
I wish I could say I'd been to more concerts, but the thing is, I've wrestled so much that, you know, I haven't left a lot of room for that kind of stuff. But my first concert was AC/DC, which was an amazing concert, obviously.
Oh, yeah. Gosh.
That was, I went to the Ballbreaker tour in like 96.
Okay, yeah.
So that was an amazing thing. I've been to see, one of my favorite bands is the Black Crowes. So I got to see them live. You know, we're in Tennessee, so I'm a country music fan too. So Travis Tritt is actually one of my favorite country music stars. I got to see him live. That was pretty good. And then when I was in Vegas wrestling, you know, we went to one of the casinos and we were going to go see this Prince cover band, you know, that was actually, you know, one of the top rated acts in Vegas. But right before we were going to see them, we were like, well, who's in there now? And they're like, Cameo. And I was like, oh, really? So we went and saw Cameo before we went and saw the Prince cover band. And the Cameo was awesome. Cameo stopped from beginning to end was rocking it. So I was pretty impressed with that.
Sweet. And then you already mentioned the 49ers. But in your lifetime, what have been some of your favorite sports teams?
Yeah, like I said, I'm a huge Bulls fan. I mean, Chicago Bulls, you know, I've been with them since, you know, pretty much day one. And I'm definitely not a fair weather fan. So all these teams, I'm a ride or die with them. So Bulls, you know, I get ready for Bulls season as soon as the other season ends. I'm looking to see who we're going to pick up in the off season and, you know, what kind of offense they're going to change to and that kind of stuff. But football, you know, I've always been a Niners fan. Of course, you know, in the 80s it was, you know, Joe Montana and Jerry Rice, and then we went into the Steve Young years, and, you know, nowadays we've got a super team pretty much. I was really disappointed in the Super Bowl this year, but, you know, there's always next year, right? That's what all football fans say.
Definitely. Okay, well, let me send you over to Sign Guy. He's got a lot of questions for you.
All right.
Thank you, Coach. Well, Champ, the AIWF is the longest independent membership in wrestling. There's pretty much every state now covered with an AIWF affiliate. Many international countries have joined the AIWF, and the world champion goes to a lot of different places defending the title. Do you feel like you're getting the experience that the world champions of old would have gotten in the territorial days, where they traveled much more frequently against a larger group of opponents?
No, unfortunately, you know, professional wrestling has changed tremendously in my lifetime, let alone over the last 50, 60 years. So, I mean, like back in the territory days, you know, professional wrestling was, people don't like to hear this, and a lot of people will doubt this, but it was a lot more popular back then than it is now. And all you have to do is go look at some of the numbers that the territories were drawing to indicate that. I mean, every territory had its own television show. Every territory had pretty much a weekly event that was drawing huge numbers. You know, they were selling out arenas of 5,000 to 10,000 people on a weekly basis, and then they had house shows or spot shows during the week too. That's just not the way the model of professional wrestling is now. You know, obviously, if, you know, you read books like Jim Cornette's History of the Midnight Express, and you read other people's, Gary Hart's book about him coming up and doing stuff, and you hear stuff like, you know, Cornette talking about how, you know, or Gary Hart talking about how he went to help the Sheik in Detroit, and he said he looked out and there was only 1,500 people in the stands, and he knew the territory was dying. You know, and nowadays, if you told any independent professional wrestler, hey, listen, you're going to go to a show with 1,500 people in the stands, they would be elated. You know what I mean? That would be – anyone drawing 1,000 or 1,500 people nowadays is considered one of the top 10 promotions in the country. You know, so just the numbers themselves aren't there to more to sustain what we're talking about. I make a living in professional wrestling, but I don't make the kind of living that a Ric Flair did Jack Briscoe or, you know, Harley Race or any of those guys. But, you know, we have to deal with the business that's in front of us, and this is the business that we're at, so we make the best of what we do. So I'm immensely proud to be a world champion. I waited my whole career to be a world champion, and I think I represent the way a world champion should represent.
When you go to independent shows, not necessarily just as the champion, but as someone that has been around for quite a while and has watched wrestling grow, like you just said, how many of the wrestlers on a given roster on average would you say are studying the history of professional wrestling and looking at what happened 20, 30, 40 years ago as opposed to just knowing what the most couple of years recently have been like?
It's a very small percentage. I mean, like, for the most part, especially some of the kids, they pretty much everyone thinks that wrestling started with the Attitude Era, you know? And with my home company and the young guys that we're trying to teach and stuff like that, we try to explain to them, no, you need to go back into the 60s, the 70s, the 80s. To me, the sweet spot of professional wrestling is the 70s and the 80s. I think that everything kind of peaks at some point and kind of maybe veers off, and I think that we peaked in professional wrestling in the 70s, 80s. It was the perfect culmination of sport and entertainment without being sports entertainment. To me, you know, when professional wrestling is done correctly, it's the most entertaining thing there is. It's the greatest form of storytelling that we have, in my opinion, because I'm a professional wrestling fan. So, you know, yeah, there's a lot of guys, if they're around my age, then obviously they remember the Hogans and the Flairs and the Macho Mans and that era and stuff like that. But these kids that are, you know, 19, 20 years old, you know, getting them to go back, and they didn't even live through the Monday Night Wars, you know what I mean? So for them to go back 5-10 years before they were born even and experience that is almost unheard of, you know? So, yeah, I'm all for, if anything else, to get them to go back and watch the reactions to things that they don't think get reactions to anymore. Like, people talk about arm drags and hip tosses like those are just ultra basic things that no one cares about. They're just fillers in between matches. And then you go back and you watch a match from 1977 and you see Jack Briscoe give someone an arm drag and the entire arena stands on their feet. You know what I mean? It's an amazing thing to see. And you're like, boy, man, how did that happen? You know, so for me, I'm always encouraging young guys to go back and study the history of professional wrestling. If anything else, to not make the same mistakes that the wrestling business did.
One of the big things that is very different in pro wrestling over the last several years is the feelings on blood as it relates to wrestling. With modern medical science learning more and more about blood pathogens, a lot of people tend to shy away from having blood on shows. A lot of people still feel that it's completely fine as long as blood tests are being done and people are making sure they're safe. Others would have blood in every single match, every single show. Where do you stand as it relates to having blood in professional wrestling in 2024?
Yeah, that's a tough question, but, I mean, the fact of the matter is professional wrestling, blood always needs to be used when it means the most, you know? And I think that's kind of what we got away from, too. We were using it too much as a crutch. Blood, 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 blood. Like you said, some people were wanting blood every show, every match, and that nature, but I've never been that way. I think blood is a great storytelling tool when used when it's needed. Obviously, there are states that have, you know, commissions and things like that to do blood work and make sure everyone's safe. I'm actually in Tennessee, which we don't have a commission, so there's no one to regulate that kind of stuff. So it's almost it comes down to a personal choice sometimes whether blood is going to be used or not. I think we want to keep the believability. You know, we want everyone to walk in there and lose their suspension of disbelief, and sometimes it's hard to do that when you ram someone's head into a post or hit them with a steel chair, and there's no consequence to that. You know what I mean? It almost becomes like Bugs Bunny in the cartoons and someone dropping an anvil on their head. You know what I mean? Oh, ha, ha, ha. You know, so I think it's needed in some cases, but at the same time, I don't want it ever to be overused.
One of the things that relates to that question is many states have athletic commissions. Every state is completely different when it comes to that. Some states don't even have a commission. Others have very strict regulations. Some states just require you pay the commission their fee, and then you can do whatever you want, basically. Especially with the AIWF having so many affiliates and you being the champion, do you have to deal with a lot of the individual athletic commissions?
Yeah, I've had to deal with several, you know, over the years, not just my time here in the AIWF, but I think athletic commissions can serve a purpose, you know what I mean? Like, but I believe most athletic commissions are mainly just to be a revenue stream for their given states. I would be much more in support of an athletic commission, a wrestling athletic commission that actually determined whether someone was fit or not to run a wrestling promotion, someone that had prior credentials or some kind of, you know, they were trained by this person that was trained by this person, and, you know, we had some kind of, you know, lineage of the history of professional wrestling to it, rather than, okay, just pay X amount of dollars and we'll give you a promoter's license and you can do whatever you want. That would be much more in favor of something like that than the, you know, the standard, you know, well, you know, we need you to do, you know, get this physical, we need you to do this blood work, we need you to jump through all these hoops. But basically, it's just we're just trying to collect money so we can add a revenue stream to our state.
As someone that has traveled quite a bit in your career, if you had to offer some advice to wrestlers that are just getting started as far as travel tips to use when on the road to make sure that they have a successful career, what are some of the travel tips you would give?
Well, one of my main things would be, first of all, you got to find someone reputable to train you, someone that actually knows what they're talking about, someone that's maybe made a living in professional wrestling, someone that actually cares about you as an individual, and they don't just see you as the dollar sign to their wrestling school. That's step number one. Step number two is you're going to have to understand that in the beginning, you're not going to be good. You understand? And sometimes being not good and traveling all over the place doesn't do you justice, because what happens is you're bad and you're bad everywhere, and then people see that you're bad everywhere, and then you may, you know, hurt yourself on opportunity in the future. So my advice actually is find someone to train you, find someone that's going to take care of you, find a show where you can sit and you can learn and you can get better and better and better in one show in front of one crowd. And then when you think you're ready, or someone tells you, hey, I think you're ready to go here and there, then you can start traveling around and start networking and doing that kind of stuff. Because bad follows you just as much as good does sometimes. You know what I mean? If you go and you make a bonehead mistake, you know, three states away, you may never get an opportunity with that promotion or in that state again, you know, depending on how close the state is as far as their promotions and how well they communicate with each other. But if you can go somewhere where someone's going to nurture you and take care of you and give you honest advice about what's going on, then you may be able to, you know, pull together. And it takes a couple years. You know, for us, you know, my kids that I train, it takes me about 6 months to a year to get them trained and match ready. Then I spend another year, maybe 2 years, polishing them on our shows and getting them, you know, the experience that they need. So, and after that, if they want to travel, I more power to you. But, you know, I try to, you know, keep them for that long at least, so we can all be on the same page.
one of the biggest stories to hit our industry in decades, perhaps even the all-time biggest story, is the Vince McMahon scandal. TKO bought the company from McMahon, and then revealed about what had happened a couple of years ago and what led to him leaving the company initially. It has the potential to send shockwaves down the whole wrestling industry if this becomes a long, drag-out battle with the federal government. Do you foresee, not even necessarily at the national TV level, but even down at the independent level, the Vince McMahon scandal hurting the business?
I don't think it's necessarily going to hurt the business. You know, obviously Vince McMahon is under a lot of fire right now. You know, for me, it's a situation of, you know, I think they're trying to say he was sex trafficking. You know what I mean? I think we need a clear definition of what sex trafficking is. You know, he had a mistress that he was dealing with, and by all accounts, it seems like she was a willing participant in a lot of this kind of stuff. So when does it, you know, become it's a fetish or it's a kink or whatever word you want to put with it, and versus it's, you know, it's something that's going to possibly send him to prison. You know what I mean? I don't agree with, you know, that lifestyle personally, but, you know, it's not necessarily illegal either. But if it comes out that, you know, he was doing something, you know, completely illegal to the federal government, you know, he's still innocent until proven guilty. You know, Vince McMahon is not going to go away without a fight, so there's going to be some kind of trial or some kind of deposition or hearing or something. So it'll be an interesting thing. You know, obviously, you know, professional wrestling, I felt for years he had took professional wrestling in a direction that I wasn't necessarily on board with. You know, he did a lot of great things for professional wrestling, but he also did a lot of things to his detriment. So for me, it's just I never thought personally that I would ever see a day when, you know, Vince McMahon wasn't running WWE unless he was dead, you know. So it has been a historic, you know, year as far as, you know, the TKO, everything, you know, coming together in that nature. So I'm interested to see where the business goes and how it flourishes or, you know, fleets out from here.
And when you look at the landscape at the national level for pro wrestling, there's possibly never been a time when the business was more accessible at that level. You have WWE on USA and just signing a massive deal with Netflix. AEW is on TBS and TNT. You have TNA Wrestling on Access TV. New Japan Pro Wrestling is on Access TV. WOW Women of Wrestling is on the CW Network, TBS affiliates. So there's a lot of wrestling at the national level now. And even if attendance is not what it used to be, the TV deals have become massive revenue streams. Do you think that with all the success the national companies have had, it's going to start going down to the independent level where they see maybe a spike in attendance, where maybe they start getting looks from the local affiliates and we see more local wrestling shows pop up?
That is a very complex question because, you know, you said obviously that these TV deals have been a good thing, but here's the thing. Really, only one company is producing profits off their television deals, and that's WWE, obviously. It was reported by WrestleNomics that AEW lost an estimated $34 million last year. They may have generated $150 million, but they still lost $34 million. And I don't think any of the other companies are generating anywhere near those kind of amounts of money either. Wrestling's only going to succeed if they're producing wrestling. Independent wrestling shows are only going to see a uptick in that kind of stuff if they're producing wrestling shows. What I actually see is I see television shows about wrestling instead of wrestling on television, if that makes sense. There's too much television going on the wrestling side of it. If they were producing, you know, wrestling events on television to where, you know, it was similar to what's going on in the independent scene, where they could go, hey, yeah, I can go, you know, 8 miles down the road here to my homegrown grassroots company and see that kind of stuff, but that's not what's going on. You know, it's the same thing when you look at NFL or NBA or anything like that. They're all sports entertainment, unfortunately, at this point. So for me, professional wrestling, I would love for it to get back to independent. I would love it to get back to the territories and stuff like that, but I don't see it really happening at the level that we want it to happen, just because at the end of the day, there's only one pot. You know what I mean? And like you talked about all those companies that have television shows and have things going on. Well, you know, I'm a huge wrestling fan. And, you know, at my peak, I was probably watching, you know, probably 8 hours of wrestling a week. You know what I mean? So even with 8 hours of wrestling a week, I'm still going to miss a lot of the shows that are going on nowadays, right? So determination is going to have to be made. It's always going to get whittled down to, like, what's the minimum is going to happen, you know? So I hope it does, you know, help in some way, but I just don't see it helping to the extent that we need it.
One day, able to step in and have authority over professional wrestling as an entity, and I know that's not a real world
like
possibility,
an omnipotent wrestling person.
Yes, if you have that authority to where you could control the industry at the independent level, what are some of the changes you would make in order to make independent wrestling successful across the board?
One, I would try to get it as close back to the reality-based professional wrestling that we had in the 70s and 80s. You know, I'm sure you're familiar with maybe Chris Statlander from AEW. You know, her gimmick when she first came in AEW was that she was an alien from another planet. And when she first debuted on television, Excalibur, the announcer, he started going into this huge backstory. Oh, she's from the planet this, and she traveled this many light years away to do this and this, and starts going on and on. And Jim Ross, just in the middle of it, goes, okay, that's enough. You know what I mean? Basically, here, professional wrestling to really thrive has to take place in reality. The way you get a person like Chris Statlander and that gimmick over is not by saying that she is an alien from another planet. You say that she thinks she's an alien from another planet. You know what I mean? And because that's something reality of age. There are people that believe they're from another planet. And it's just that miscommunication between the generations of professional wrestling fans. You know, there's this thing that pretty much they think that, you know, anything, you can be anything. You can do anything. You know what I mean? Like, you know, if you want to say that you're a zombie, if you want to say that you're, you know, this or that, you know, there's this huge jump from reality to what professional wrestling is going to be. But as we all know, the best professional wrestling is the one where you take the person and you take their personality and you turn the volume up to 10. As long as we stay to the core of professional wrestling and we get back to that basic principle of it, you know, I think a lot of things will be better, you know. Right now we're not attracting big, young, athletic guys. We're not attracting like the Dr. Death Steve Williams, who wrestled and played football at the University of Oklahoma, and then in his off seasons also professionally wrestled. You know, we're not attracting that level of athlete. We're attracting, you know, video game guys that are, you know, 140 pounds. And we've seen the size of people in professional wrestling and the legitimate athleticism of professional wrestling athletes diminish over the last 30 years.
When you look at your career and you look back at everything that you have done, do you have any specific moment in your career where you look at it and feel like that is where you first became a success in professional wrestling?
Well, I'll tell you what, a really good aha moment for me was I wrestled a guy named Flash Flanagan, and Flash was a former OVW heavyweight champion. You know, he pretty much helped polish and train the John Cenas and the Batistas and the Brock Lesnars and the Randy Ortons, and he was a part of that whole OVW class with Nick Densmore and a lot of those guys. And I wrestled a match with him because he was part of our crew here in Tennessee, and he came to the back, man. He was just like, man, that was a really, really good match. Thank you so much, blah, blah, blah. And I was ecstatic because, you know, I really looked up to him a lot. Well, we came back the next week, and he said, hey, man, I watched that match again. I was like, oh, yeah, really? And he goes, yeah, it wasn't as good as I thought it was. And my heart kind of sank. And I was like, well, what was the problem? And he started telling me that, you know, hey, listen, you're so good at what you do that you're outshining me. You're the bad guy, and you're outshining me in a lot of things I do. So you need to do less, and you need to yell at the people, and you need to get heat, and you need to do this and this and this. And I kind of got upset. I kind of argued with him for a few weeks about it. And, like, after a while, I was like, okay, you know, screw it. I'll do it your way. You know, we'll throw it your way. And I went out there and did it his way, and it became so much easier to be a professional wrestler once I did it that way. And I understood that it wasn't about the moves anymore. It was about that interaction between me and the fans. And once that aha moment, once that clicked in my mind, that completely changed everything for me. And then that's when I got the tag with Beautiful Bobby Eaton, and me and him were a tag team for 2 years. And then from there, I got to go to Traditional Championship Wrestling, which ended up being on national television, was in available over 50 million homes. And then I got to wrestle in Vegas, and then I got to be NWA National Heavyweight Champion. And just that little thing that Flash did for me kind of turned me just, you know, 45 degrees in another direction, and it just sent me on a completely different trajectory in my career.
Fun fact, Flash Flanagan, one of the people that used to book for me back when we were at Hoosier Pro Wrestling.
Yep. One of my good friends. I love him to death. He did a lot for me. I credit him. Anytime I'm on a podcast like this, I try to give him as much credit as I possibly can.
I do as well. He always treated me extremely well. And I have the distinction of being in the scariest bump Flash ever saw, according to Flash. But so
like
I got
when
that.
He ever did, or when, or when he saw, when he saw live.
I believe both.
Well, but, you know, he got thrown off that balcony in Puerto Rico.
I am very aware of that. I took a similar bump. He said mine was scarier.
Okay.
Hey, hold on, time out. Time out. Let me explain this to you, sir.
Okay.
Sign guys wrestling over there in Indiana. All them, a lot of big stars are there. It's like some fundraisers for the fire department. So they got firemen in the battle royal. And somehow the firemen decide, like, I think it's like three firemen decide sign guys going to be a missile outside the ring. So they lift him over their head, upside down. So they lift him butt to the sky, stomach to the sky, walk him over to the ropes, and then go to launch him off the ropes from in the ring to the concrete floor. And when they threw him like that, fine guy's top foot hit the rope. And missiled him straight into the concrete, and he dented the concrete.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that is pretty scary.
I was relatively okay the next week, but, you know,
relatively
scared Flash.
I don't think I'd be relatively okay now.
So resume.
All right, well, that's all I got, so I'm going to pass you right back over to the coach with the most.
Okay, yes. My goodness, in your career, have you worked as any different characters?
No. I've just been the Golden Boy. I was the golden boy for the first couple of years, and then we added, you know, my name, Greg Anthony, a couple of years later. But, you know, I've been the golden boy, Greg Anthony, pretty much the whole time. So never any different characters,
awesome.
You know, obviously just different versions of myself. You know, as I said, tagging with Bobby Eaton, I was a part of the TCW stuff, and I ended up being part of the Empire, which was me, Matt Riviera, Tim Storm, you know, that group. So, I mean, just different versions of myself.
Okay, and then in your career, who have been your favorite people to work with?
You know, I mean, just everyone has done different stuff. You know, in ring, you know, guys like Stan Lee and Christian Jacobs, and, you know, me and Jay Lethal had an amazing match in TCW back in the day. But a guy like Matt Riviera, for instance, you know, he was a guy when I got to Matt in the TCW stuff, you know, I was pretty polished. I was pretty good. And he took me to another level of stuff, you know, with just his mindset and his different versions of aspects of the business. So I always credit him with, you know, a lot as well.
Nice. And then in your career, who have been some of your toughest opponents? I know that you have faced some of the toughest wrestlers in the world. I know that I've seen you face one of the toughest wrestlers, but who do you think have been your toughest opponents?
Well, going back to Flash, I mean, Flash was definitely one of my toughest opponents. Another guy that absolutely beat the hell out of me most times was Tracy Smothers, God rest his soul. Tracy and I he was another mentor of mine, but, you know, anytime we had to go bell to bell against each other, it was a fight, you know what I mean? So, and Tracy hit me just about as hard as he could, and I know I tried to hit him as hard as I could just to get him to stop. So, but there's guys like Bull Bronson, too, who's, you know, 400 pounds, and, you know, he basically, Bull Bronson is the guy at the end of the bar that you don't want to mess with, you know? So there's been guys like that throughout my career that just, you know, they hit you like a freight train, you know?
Yes, definitely.
Another fun fact real quick, Tracy Smothers also there the night I dented the cement floor. He was scared the rest of his life for me.
Yes. Tracy took one bad bump, too. He took a bad bump in a ladder match with Chris Candido, and he said that's what gave him his limp that last, you know, 20 years or whatever it was. And he explained it to me. So, yeah, I could see how Tracy would definitely be worried about you from every day after that.
Okay, and speaking of tough opponents, one of the toughest wrestlers in the world, the Tokyo Monster, I see you. I was ringside for the Real School Army with Tokyo Monster Kahegis at Cauliflower Alley when you two guys squared off. You wasn't the world champion then, and man, you took it to him. It looked like you had the match in the bag, but Tokyo pulled it out, and that was one tough match that I've seen. My goodness.
Yeah, Tokyo's tough. He's one of the hardest choppers in the business for sure. And but I wouldn't have lost that match if it wasn't for James Beard. James Beard was the referee, and he got unnecessarily physically involved with me, and he cost me that match. You know, so I still tell people I'm undefeated at Cauliflower Alley.
Okay, there you go. And then speaking of matches, it's like with people's match counts, like Kevin Sullivan says he's up into like the 10,000s. And I think Jericho has in his book, I think he's around 3,000. But, you know, 4,000, my goodness, you beat Jericho. That's cool.
Yeah, like I said, I mean, I've taken very little time off in 24 years, you know, and I've wrestled between, you know, 125, 150, to 200 matches a year that entire time. So. And like I said, I was always the guy that, you know, wanted to wrestle, you know, if someone had to wrestle twice a match or twice a night.
Oh, yes. Goodness. It's not three. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you a fun time. One time we wrestled a show in a small town here in Tennessee called Brighton, Tennessee. And there was very few wrestlers on the show. So I went out first and I wrestled a 2 out of 3 falls match, Stan Lee. And these were like legitimate 2 out of 3 falls, like 10, 12 minutes a fall. Right. And then in our last fall, two guys got involved, and we ended up in a tag match. right? But then I wrestled a full tag match with another, you know, 12, 15 minutes, right? Then at the end of the tag match, me and my partner got into a scuffle, and then I had another singles match after that. So
yeah,
I wrestled five matches. I basically wrestled five matches. I was in the ring probably, you know, an hour and a half, and then they took an intermission, and then they came back with the main event.
Man, I know. I hear you. And then sometimes you might even go, plus a battle royal. I mean, goodness.
Plus a battle royal, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, then anyway. Oh, my goodness. You already gave some suggestions earlier, but is there any other suggestions you'd like to give for people wanting to get into the business?
Like I said, the main thing is just find someone that's reputable to train you. There's always going to be some guys who say, oh, yeah, I'll train you to wrestle. And they may train you for 3-4 weeks, and then all of a sudden you're having matches. That's not the way it's supposed to be. I've got friends that train people country. And even though, you know, we don't have the same curriculum identical, we have a lot of the same stuff. There's a lot of similarity between all these guys that know what they're doing. Myself and Dr. Tom and, like, you know, the Dustin Rhodes Academy, the Nightmare Academy, and all that kind of stuff, and people all across the country that know what they're doing. When I talk to them about my curriculum and how we train people, we're all very, very similar. And it takes us all about 6 months to a year to get someone match ready. So if someone says you can be wrestling in a month, you know what I mean, and you're only training once a week, you know, that's almost impossible. We train twice a week, and it takes us 6 months to a year. So find someone that can train you reputably. They'll make sure that everything's a progression, and the main thing is we don't want you to get hurt, and we don't want you to hurt anyone else, you know. And the less training you have, the more likely of that's going to happen, you know. So when guys come to my training academy, they sign basically a 2-year contract with me, you know. So find someone that's going to take care of you and take that much time and effort into helping you understand this business.
Definitely. And then who are some up-and-comers that you want to give a shout-out to?
Man, we've got a lot of young talent in my company and stuff like that. We got guys, you know, guys that I trained several years ago are kind of making their way into the upper echelon of the company. Guys like Bud Powell and Pee Wee Pitts and the Real Foot Saint, Brandon Ray. But then we got new guys that are like, you know, the Yellow Jacket and Jason Perez and Wonder Boy Jr., and, you know, we just got a host full of guys, Tyler B. Jordan, Big Cody Sawyer, the Uber Destroyer. You know what I mean? We got a bunch of guys that are ready to take professional wrestling by storm.
Nice. And then what do you got coming up, brother?
Man, I'm a little bit everywhere. You know, obviously, I'm my home base is Pro Wrestling Mid-South. You know, we do every Friday night in Ripley, Tennessee, every Saturday night in Dyersburg, Tennessee. In May, I'm going to Southern Illinois Championship Wrestling, which is run by the great Herb Simmons, and going to be part of their big St. Louis deal coming up. Going to be going to Alabama soon. We got something set up for Chicago. You know, we're trying to get everywhere. You know, we're trying to let everyone know that AIWF, you know, being the only legitimate, you know, governing body of professional wrestling, you know, I think it's like 144 promotions in like 38 countries or something at this point, you know. So we're just trying to represent the AIWF the best we can.
Sweet. And I see Matt Classic's always on there hosting stuff, right?
Yeah, absolutely. He's a really good guy. I met him in Vegas, you know, several years ago, and we kind of, you know, talked then, and we just kind of kept in communication with each other. And, you know, the last 2 years, you know, we've been a part of the AIWF, and I got an opportunity to be the world champion. So here we are. We're rocking and rolling, man. I really feel like, you know, we're taking the AIWF onward and upward. You know, I think there was 90 promotions when I became champion, and now, like I said, we're close to 140. So, you know, a lot of people have kind of turned in and said, hey, what's this AIWF stuff all about? So we're really getting some really good promotions, some really good outstanding professional wrestlers from across the country that are wanting to be a part of this thing. And, you know, we want as many guys as we can to help spread the word.
Cool. And how do people get a hold of you, brother?
Best way is through Facebook. I'm, you know, the Golden Boy Greg Anthony on Facebook. I have Instagram and things like that and YouTube channel and all that other stuff. But Facebook is definitely the best way to get a hold of me.
Okay. And then, hey, before I let you go, I just got a message from Chicken Bob that sign guy, what did Chicken Bob just discover?
Oh, Chicken Bob was pointing out when you talked about all the matches and everything, I once went out 19 times over 3 days for Coach Mike Jones.
Yeah, that was at a food drive, an all weekend long food drive. Yeah, I forgot about that.
That's okay, going to be a record
sign guy. Hey, sign guy, anything else for the Golden Boy?
Just good luck on your upcoming matches, and hopefully we'll cross paths soon. I think we got a lot in common.
Yeah, absolutely, man. I appreciate you guys having me on. You know, anytime I'm allowed to spread the word of professional wrestling, then I'm all about it.
Man, thank you so much for your time and for your story and for your interview and what you bring for wrestling and your wrestling mind. And, man, I wish you all the luck in the world, brother. Thanks again.
Thank you, brother. Take care.
All right, everyone. There he is, the Golden Boy, the AIWF World Heavyweight Champion. Brother Sign Guy, what do you got coming up, man? You're a busy dude.
In just a few short hours, I will be in Linwood, Washington for Combat Pro Wrestling Presents Theatrical Wrestling. And then 1 week from today, I will be back in Ocean Shores for RWA. A week after that, I'll be in Vaughan, Washington for Northwest Pro. And then the next week, I will be back at Paulcade this year there at the arena in Jeffersonville, Indiana. And don't forget, tomorrow on Turnbuckle Turmoil, you can join us with our guest wrestling commentator, Aaron Phillips.
Awesome. And how do people contact you on social media?
They can find me on the Book of Faces, the X, the Gram, the YouTubes. Just look up Sun Guy. You will find it. Chicken Bob also up there on all the social medias. He's very socially active for a chicken. And he's got scores and scores of pictures from his trip to El Paso, Texas last week.
Yes, you got to see the rhinoceros, right?
Yes, he went in and visited Todd the rhinoceros.
And did he come from Washington?
Todd did, yes. He was living here in Seattle for the past 7 years.
Nice. And you still work at the zoo?
Indeed.
Awesome, man. We would have missed the flamingos if I didn't just happen to see you that day.
The flamingos are fantastic, too. You would have left with a lesser zoo experience.
Exactly. Man, okay, man. Thank you so much, Sign Guy. We appreciate you. We want to get together with you and QT, and we want to thank QT also for the creation, for helping create Turnbuckle Turmoil that I'm blessed to be a co-host on every Sunday at 1 o'clock Pacific with wonderful Sign Guy here. And then you guys can check me out at Coach Mike Jones, the Coach of the Most. Coach Mike Jones on Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, and Twitter. Don't forget to check out the Real School Army and the NGW Green Room for hundreds of interviews from celebrities all over the world. And the Coach Mike Jones Show podcast every Saturday at noon Pacific. Next week I have Rudy Boy Gonzalez on April 6th. And I'll get the rest of April showed up here pretty soon. And thank you so much. Hey, Sign, is there anything else you'd like to plug or promote?
Just that you can find me tonight in Linwood. And also next Friday afternoon on the show, we have Northwest pro wrestler Christian Wild. So make sure you tune in for that. Going to be a wild time, as it were.
And where's he coming out of?
He is based in Spokane via Texas.
Yes, and Spokane's got their Relentless show tonight. That should be exciting also at the Quest Casino.
Absolutely. Going to be a big-time show for the Spokane area. Hopefully they get a full house there tonight.
All right. Thanks again, Sign Guy. Here is the Never Were with Joe Love and Coach Mike Jones walk-on song. Thank you so much.
That's right, everybody. You know who it is. Coach Mike Jones on the coach with the most. Coming at you hard from coast to coast. I don't want to boast, but now I got to roast you in my social media posts. You double dose, a diagnose. You feeling tired, life inspired, now you're a ghost. I'll be your host, so won't you raise a toast to the coach with the most, Coach Mike Jones.
Forget to say, love you guys. Thank you so much.